He left his horse, which had calmed as suddenly as it had bucked, and was now wandering off, ignoring the noise from the other side of the tank, and Dean made his way into the shadows. Inching his way around, he blocked out the sounds of blaster fire from the other side of the tanks and focused his attention on the wag and surrounding area. Although he stayed on triple red, every sense alert for the slightest sound or movement, he was soon aware that the wag was standing alone. It was up to him to move quickly and provide the distraction. Moving over to the wag, which was a jeep just like the wag he had seen driving away on their previous encounter, he could see that it was empty. There were no extra blasters or any Plasex. They had obviously brought what they needed for the job and no more. That suited him fine, for what he had in mind would have entailed a whole lot more trouble if there had been Plasex on board. Dean took a piece of material from the wag. It may have been a shirt, or it may have been a piece of cloth that the Plasex had been wrapped in. The youth unscrewed the cap on the wag's gas tank and prodded the piece of cloth down the hole, stretching it to make it as long as possible. The cloth touched the gas in the tank and began to soak it up. Dean pressed more of the cloth in, then pulled it out. One end was soaked in gas. He reversed the cloth and pressed the dry end down, repeating the action. When he pulled out the cloth, it was dripping gas, which he let drip down the side of the wag, from the open hole to the dusty earth. He then stepped back, laying the rag out to give him a short fuse, and backed off a few paces before aiming his blaster and squeezing off a shot. The rag sparked and flamed, the fire spreading up the side of the wag with a thin blue flame and down into the gas tank. Dean turned and flung himself to the ground, covering his head with his arms. The wag exploded, and Dean felt the heat and shock of the blast sweep over him, rendering him temporarily deaf and scorching his back and legs. But as soon as it had passed over him, he forced himself to his feet, ears still ringing, and was ready to face the oncoming saboteurs, because he knew that they wouldn't be able to ignore this. Ryan was riding into the blaster fire, moving from side to side and evading the bullets, although he did feel one tug at his shirt just above the ribs. A hot pain like a needle through his flesh registered momentarily, but he had too much adrenaline coursing through his system and was too focused on the action ahead for it to stay his course. He managed to squeeze off a couple of shots from the Steyr, the heavier ammo from the rifle resounding above the blaster fire from the two saboteurs. The shots hit the tank behind them, causing no harm to them, but nonetheless deflecting them from their task. And then the explosion came from behind the tank. For one moment, the area was illuminated by the light of the explosion, and in the strange shadows cast on the side of the tank he was approaching, Ryan was able to see the two saboteurs outlined against the tank. They were both obviously stunned by the explosion. Its ferocity and suddenness had momentarily stopped them dead in their tracks. Ryan was startled by the explosion, but he kept bearing down on them, taking the opportunity to straighten his mount's path for a second and take a proper aim at the two saboteurs. He had been expecting some diversionary action from Dean, although that wasn't quite what he had in mind. He squeezed off a shot from the Steyr, and it ate into the ground between the two saboteurs. Leave it to the others to maybe capture a saboteur and question him. Right now it was chill or be chill. The bullet hit the small package of Plasex between the two saboteurs, and they disappeared in an explosion that knocked Ryan back and off his mount. The horse whinnied in fright and bolted off into the desert night. The package had been heavier than Ryan could have supposed, and it scored heavily into the metal side of the tank, scoring a huge crater into the ground and obliterating all traces of the two saboteurs. As he pulled himself to his feet, he knew that if he caused some damage to be done to the storage tank, then it was a big mistake on his part. However, as he began to run forward, still deafened by the blast, toward the tanks, he could see that the side of the tank was scored and dented, but not ruptured. This was a relief, but he would be more relieved if he could find his son. He didn't bother to yell, as he figured that Dean would be as deafened by the blast as himself. Dean's ears felt as if they were bleeding, but when he put his fingers to one of them, there was no blood. He had just been heading around the tank when the second explosion had knocked him from his feet. As he scrambled up again, with the Browning high power ready to fire, he was thinking only of one thing. Was his father all right? Both the younger and older Carter had their blasters ready as they came into each other's view. But the razor-sharp reflexes passed from father to son enabled them to hold up from firing as each saw the other. They both breathed a sigh of relief. They were alive, and knowing the other's capabilities, they knew that their enemies had been routed here. Christy, Mildred, and Doc were approaching the refinery buildings from their different positions and found themselves converging at the same point. But they still used the handsets to communicate, as it was difficult to be heard over the pounding of the horses' hooves and the roar of the wag.
How are we going to tackle this?
I would suggest taking each building in turn. I think we should stick together to avoid confusion.
No, we can't risk them spreading out over the two buildings and having the time to cause damage. We'll have to split up.
Yeah, I can see that. There are three buildings, two of them linked by that walkway. I say we take one each.
Very well. I fear I am not the quickest among us, so I should take the nearest.
Yeah, good idea. I'll take the far one. You take the middle, Christy.
Okay, but stay alert, because this doesn't feel good.
Mildred nodded and spurred her horse, heading off to the far building, hoping that the saboteurs would be too busy to provide each other with covering fire. For she was sure that there would be at least one saboteur in each building. Christy headed for the middle. If they had already been spotted, then at least they would divide enemy fire. Which left Doc to take the straight course down the middle. Doc wasn't an easily frightened man, particularly not after the things he had seen and endured, but in his more lucid moments, he was painfully aware of his shortcomings. And he knew that he was probably the weakest of the companions, both physically and in terms of sanity. He also knew that he was the poorest horseman of them all. So he was glad that he had the shortest journey to the point of trouble, but also aware that it made him an easy target. In the darkness and shadow around the nearest refinery building, Doc couldn't tell if it was empty. Knowing his limitations, Doc suddenly pulled up his horse and dismounted, going the rest of the way on foot. It would take longer, but he felt more confident about his ability to take evasive or offensive action without having to worry about staying on his mount. In fact, he could use the beast as a diversionary measure. A smile crept over Doc's face as he directed the animal toward the blockhouse refinery building and slapped its rump so hard that it made his palm sting. The pained and affronted creature ran toward the blockhouse, while Doc checked that his Lamar pistol was loaded. There were two charges. Doc's use of the horse as a diversion was good judgment. Several shots rang out from the interior of the blockhouse, all from the one blaster by the sound of them, which suggested just the one enemy inside. Doc started to run toward the building, low to the ground. The shots found their mark, and the horse screeched in pain, falling heavily to the ground as it was hit in several places. Doc followed behind and used the chilled animal as cover. There was a moment of tense silence before Doc's opponent emerged from the blockhouse. A short, fat man with a hand blaster clutched in his fist came out of a doorway in a crouch, and seeing the felled animal, took one tentative step toward it. That was all Doc needed. It was a distance of just about 150 yards, and the man had stepped from complete darkness into relative light from the pale moon. A light strong enough, by contrast, for Doc to sight him and pull the trigger on the Lamar. With a loud boom that seemed to resound in the sudden silence, the load of shot was expelled at high speed from the old blaster. The red-hot grape shot hit the fat saboteur full in the face and upper chest, the pellets of hot metal ripping his skin and flesh. He lay still, and Doc waited for return fire from inside. There was nothing. He waited a few more seconds, then moved from around the chilled horse and made his way toward the blockhouse, moving close to the ground. He stepped over the chilled saboteur and looked inside, ready to fire at anything that moved. But nothing did. One man down. Mildred had reached the far building and could see the empty wag. She crouched over the horse's neck, hoping that even if her mount was big enough to hit, she could make herself small enough to miss. However, there was no fire directed against her. She swung herself over the horse, keeping her body on the blind side of the wag and refinery building. She slowed the horse so that she was able to touch the ground with her foot and hit the earth running, keeping pace with the creature in order to provide cover. As she guided the horse nearer the wag, she could see that it was empty, and she slapped the horse's flank to drive it away. Keeping low, Mildred moved over to the wag. Using it as cover, she surveyed the refinery building. There was no sign of activity, but because the wag was empty of anything approaching arms and ammo, she was sure that someone had to be inside. They obviously hadn't seen her, so now she was faced with getting across from the wag to the building without being seen. and as it was an empty space with no cover, there was little she could do. It was then that fate played a hand, fate in the shape of Christy Roth. The Titian-haired beauty had made her way to the back of the refinery building.